The House of Whispering Shadows by Eugene Cunningham. The country north of Las Tunas is flat, yellow desert, dappled with the varying shades of green found in yucca, greasewood, tornillo, ocotillo, and prickly pear. It is hemmed in on either side by savage red-black mountains as grim as the faces of Apaches who once made the rugged canyons their fortresses. Through the flat, the river runs in a narrow belt of green and thorny bosque. Where, who once upon a time had served as temporary city marshal of Las Tunas, knew the country vaguely. So he frowned forebodingly when he had finished the letter from Captain Knowles, brought to his hand by the Mexican youth who was often the captain's messenger. Teo Ribo was vanished, the captain wrote, gone as if the earth or yellow sand had swallowed him, taken at the same gulp the buckboard and span of little Mexican mules, with little Teo, Ribot's 10-year-old son, and $7,600. The Ribot family had searched in vain for trace of them, old Teo and little Teo, when they failed to return from La Piedra. Now they asked ranger assistance of Captain Knowles, an old acquaintance of Teo Ribot.
And I gotta go wander through the desert looking for a sand dune that might have Ribot's body and the kids underneath it. All right, we be in.
He looked to Antonio, the messenger.
Go you back to me, Capitan. Say that I ride now for Los Alamos to do all that a man may to make this mystery clear. But if Ribot had with him so much money, why certainly he is dead now. Remains but to try to find the manner of his dying and the names of those who killed him.
He saddled up Rocket and turned the horse's head south and east toward a pass he had heard of in the Soldados Range. It was a lonely land, savage and sinister, that he rode through for days, lucky to find waterholes every day, making many a dry camp, living off the pronghorn antelopes and rabbits killed with the little Winchester carbine. But if the country were empty of man, it held much to interest and fascinate Ware, who had been bred in much the same sort of land. He crossed the river and went on east, guided now by the directions given him by a Mexican rider who had seemed none too anxious to answer questions. The ranch of Carlos Smith, the D-Bar-D, lay at the head of Wood Creek, no more than a short 2 days' ride.
Here a man might go on eastward to the settlement of La Piedra.
La Piedra?
Ware narrowed his gray-green eyes and sent the Mexican's hand creeping toward a bulge beneath his serape.
Hell, I'm getting on to old man Tail Ribot's trail. He was supposed to be coming home from La Piedra.
Ware grinned at the Mexican.
You may take your hand off that pistol, amigo mio. I have no quarrel with you. Indeed, I thank you most kindly for your directions. A sad business, that a Senor Ribot, no?
It seemed to him that the tawny face almost altered, that there was a flashing change instantly checked. To tell what? That was the trouble. A Mexican who had reasons for not desiring his every activity to be bared would act as this one did at mention of Ribot's name, for fear of having to account for himself and, in proving innocence of complicity in Ribot's disappearance, prove guilt of something else. Ribot's murderer would act the same because of fear.
Del Señor Ribot? Si, a bad business, if the Señor says so.
Ware watched him go, grinning a little, but not good-humoredly. For he knew Mexicans, and this was doubtless an indicator of what he would encounter on every hand when he began investigating Ribot's fate. Going on toward the D-Bar-D, he mulled over what he knew of Teo Ribot. It was not much. He wished Captain Knowles had thought to include more information about the politician in his letter. Ribot was a man of mysterious antecedents. He had been known to hint, when in liquor, that his name was an old and famous one somewhere back east. He was a lawyer, but more politician than attorney. In this frontier country, his shrewdness, his education, had made him a man standing head and shoulders above most. His manners, Ware had heard, were those of a courtier. He was a welcome guest at the finest homes of Las Tunas. And he had married a slatternly Mexican woman.
partly through drink and partly because of more competition as the land grew tamer and attracted more men of education, Ribault had for 3 or 4 years now been losing his grip. Where he had been second, if not first, in political circles, of late he had been barely able to control his own town of Los Alamos. Investments, too, had seemed to fail him. He was no longer rich. All this wear had gotten here and there from chance-dropped remarks of men over a great sweep of country. He wished now, as he jogged up to Carlos Smith's adobe ranch house on Wood Creek, that he had taken pains to learn more. He reined in Rocket and looked with interest at the bare yard of the D-Bar-D, with its squat fort-like house and rows of adobe cabins behind it, all shaded by giant cottonwoods.
Howdy! You look as if you'd ridden a pace. So light and rest yourself.
Ware eyed the man curiously as he swung down. In every detail of feature and dress, he was a pelado, a laboring Mexican. But his language was that of a cowpuncher.
I'm Smith. Carlos Smith. You thought I was Mex, of course. Well, I'm half. The old man drifted down to this here country and squatted on Wood Creek. That was 30 years ago. He couldn't find a white woman nowhere's handy in them days, so he hacked over to Rancheria, the settlement southwest of here, and got Ma.
Glad to meet you. I'm heading for Los Alamos, and one of your boys I ran into this side of the river, he said I might as well come over here and get some grub before I struck south.
No boy of mine. I work 2-3 hands all Mex Vaqueros, and they're all on my east range. Don't know who it could have been you met.
Ware knew instinctively that he was lying, but inwardly he grinned. There was more than a little smuggling in this region, and if Carlos Smith were mixing in it, as well he might with his mixed blood, that was nothing to him.
Don't know either. Bad business about Teo Ribault, wasn't it?
Ah, sure was. They tell me, a couple of fellas from Los Alamos that come looking for him, that I must have been the last one to see Teo, except them that downed him. If he was downed.
You don't think there's any doubt of that? The way I heard it, the other side of the Soldados, somebody killed him and the boy as they came back from La Piedra. He had a lot of money in his buckboard, they say.
$7,640. I ought to know. I paid him right here in this house and took back my mortgage. So glad I done it, too. The money was due the next day, and if I'd had to monkey around trying to find out who to pay it to, now some law shark might have found a way to say my place was forfeit. It's worth twice the money, too.
Carlos gestured toward the house, and they went into the cool dusk of the front room.
Sit down. Oh, it's so fine to have somebody drifting into Auger with. I don't see many folks. Old Teo, he came through here and collected the money from me, then went on to La Piedra. Then he came back and stopped overnight. Him and the boy and a Mex I never seen before. A week or so after, up come Judd Bingham and Whiskers Logan from Los Alamos looking for him. And you're the next one to drift in.
Coming to the job that faced him, Ware felt innate suspicion of everyone who might have had the slightest connection with the Ribault affair. Now he wondered if this account of Smith's, with its detail, were artless or artful. The indirect alibi of one who knew a good deal, or merely the garrulous talk of a man much alone. But nothing showed in his blank face or his greenish eyes, which Ware studied.
Funny the old man would collect the money from you and then go to La Piedra and then bring it back with him. Looks like he'd have dodged all that packing and left it with you till he was ready to hit for home.
He wanted to, but me, I knew that old fox too damn well, I did. Time he got back here, you see, the due date had be passed by, and he'd likely have grinned at me and refused to take the money, so I made him give me back my mortgage and take the money. Then I told him he could hide the sack somewheres round till he come back. Nah, I knew the old devil too well, Ware. I ain't saying he was too crooked to sleep in any hoss corral in the country, for I ain't seen all the hoss corrals, but he was too foxy for me to take a chance with.
Thoughtfully, Ware glanced at the wide, bullion-trimmed sombrero hanging on a peg beside the door they'd come through. It was not surprising to find himself recognized after all. The Mexican sombrero, the short jacket of soft tanned goat skin with its bunch of flowers embroidered on the back, the wide bottomed trousers with scarlet insert at the outer seam,
These were uniforms such as no other Ranger wore at present. But why had not Smith voiced his recognition directly, voiced it in the beginning, instead of letting it show now by inadvertent use of his name? It might mean nothing, of course, but Ware was trained to hunt for trifles as well as large indicators in his business.
I've heard old Teo's pretty sudden in his dealings. I never fancied these political pups a lot. Ribot was always hunting some government job that'd give him good pay with no work and lots of influence. I've heard about a thing or two he's done by having some sort of loop over somebody. That kind of business don't set level on my stomach.
My D2. He was packing more secrets, I reckon, than anybody had a right to know. Me? I'm a good Democrat. Same as Pa was. Ribot, he was a blamed Republican, and so I never had much dealing with him. But I reckon he knew something about a lot of Democrats. The politicians.
What made you say you didn't really believe he was dead?
Shucks. Old Taylor wasn't so easy handled as you might figure to look at him. He packed 2 sixes under his arms, and he never needed no day's notice to get him out, neither. And he could do fancy work with them, too, once he got them out. He went to Las Tunas one time after a Mex, and the city marshal delivered the fella to Teo. Going back on the stage, the Mex grabbed a gun off a fella and brought her down slow, grinning like a tomcat, you know. And Teo, he pulled a gun and punctured that year Mex 3 times and done her before the Mex could shoot.
I know all about that deal. The gun the Mex grabbed was empty, and the fella he grabbed it from was a hired hand of Teo's. The Mex was allowed to grab the gun.
Well, maybe so. Anyway, Teo was cat-eyed. Looks funny to me that anybody could have got the drop on him. And if he was took by surprise, he'd still have got him a lunch out of the fellas that bushwhacked him. And looky here, where. The old devil was about at the end of his twine round here. He was sitting in the buckboard with $7,640 and the wide world before him. He knew there was men round here that like a chance to kill him because of what he done to him or knew about him. Suppose he just drove on.
Can't happen. Seems to me you were lucky to have the money to pay him, Smith.
Lucky? Hell! I damn nigh went down onto my marrow bones to old Clem Tooley at La Piedra to borrow it off'n him. He's got a mortgage on the D-Bar D today that sticks tighter than nary mustard plaster ye ever seen. And it ain't fur but 1 year, too. Interest a running 15%. Man, I just jumped out of one jackpot into a tighter one.
Lying on his cot that night, Ware lay long awake. It seemed to him that the theory advanced by Carlo Smith was plausible enough. Teo Ribot might well have decided to leave this country where, beyond doubt, he'd about played out his hand. Men had been known to disappear forever in this wide land with even less cause than had Ribot. But a plausible theory was by no means a probable explanation. Ribot might have analyzed his situation and decided that it was hopeless and downright dangerous. But on the other hand, he might just as logically have clung to the hope so typical of a politician of putting over a coup that would seat him again in power. If this last supposition were the truth, then there remained the other possibilities Ware had seen from the beginning. Ribot might have been waylaid and murdered for the money Smith said he carried away from the D-Bar D. He might have been murdered by political enemies and robbed as a matter of incident. Smith's story, plausible enough in all its detail, was still worth nothing in the investigation unless its truth could be indubitably established. So instead of heading for Los Alamos in the morning, he must ride to La Piedra and have a talk with this Clem Tooley, who had loaned Carlos Smith the money to meet Ribot's claim against the D-Bar D. Suddenly he thought of something Smith had said. The unknown Mexican who had come back in the buckboard with the Ribots. This was the first mention he had heard of such a one. It might well prove to be the explanation of the whole mystery. A third person, also vanished, could answer everything. The next morning, Carlos Smith ate breakfast with him and came outside to watch him saddle Rocket. A Mexican woman brought cooked food to put in Ware's saddlebags.
Gone to Los Alamos, huh? Well, you can stop tonight at the House of Whispering Shadows.
Stop where?
The House of Whispering Shadows. Capin's place. The house he built on the old Open A Ranch.
How come they call it that?
Oh, Capon's an odd old hombre in lots of ways. Foreigner of some kind, but he talks as good as anybody. Drifted into this country 20 years so back. Won the Open A off in a young Al Twombly and built this big house on it. The Mechs are scared to hang round it much. They say the spirits dance underneath it.
Capon. Capon. New to me. What's his first name?
Got none. Which is just another one of the odd things about him. He just signs Capon to everything. Always has. Right hefty among the politicos, Capon is. Gonna be our next sheriff, and he'll pack the whole ticket in with them. Him and Rebo was about the biggest politicians in the country, I reckon. Friendly enough, though, they was.
I see. Well, if I'm gonna make La Piedra by noon, I'd better hightail it.
La Piedra? Why, I thought you was heading for Los Alamos about the
Rebo business, I'll bet. Well, I reckon it was some sort of natural guess for you. Rebo's not showing up, and a ranger riding in would make it look like the ranger was on the trail. But I got a little private job Aunt Piedra way to do. You haven't had a dark-skinned, bat-eared hairpin ride by, have you? Fellow with a white scar on his neck that might call himself Barry or maybe, well, most any name?
Nary bit. Of course, a fellow not envious to be known might pass up a ranch house.
Yes, that's so. Well, if I come back here, I'll stop off. So long.
Ware moved vaguely eastward along the Fink Trail, and as he went, even as mechanically he studied the trail and found here and there the marks of buckboard wheels to prove Rebo's passage a good while before, he mulled the puzzle of Carlos Smith. For, correctly of the reverse, Ware was suspicious of the Mexican-looking cowboy-talking rancher. But when he came into La Piedra, he found Clem Tooley sitting like a huge Buddha on the gallery of his trading store. Tooley at least verified the part of the story Smith had told. Ware, sizing Tooley swiftly, had squatted upon the floor near the storekeeper and introduced himself curtly. Tooley, his big face motionless as in images, had nodded and continued to smoke lazily, the black Mexican cigarette pushing forth inch by inch from his strangely thin lips as it was consumed. When Ware had told frankly of his work and the necessity of testing each step, Tooley had nodded blankly once more, the blue eyes, half hidden in rolls of fat, twinkling a little.
Yeah, I loaned Carlo $7,640. Took a mortgage on the D-Bar-D to cover the loan. It's worth 2-3 times the money, the outfit is, if I have to foreclose.
I suppose Carlo Smith hadn't paid the money over to Rebo. Suppose he just rammed it into his pants and Rebo had foreclosed.
Meaning I'd have had no security? Ha! These boys around here, they know me right well. They wouldn't none of them pull a dirty trick like that on old Clem Tooley unless they was real sure, mightily sure, he was good and dead. No, I loaned Carlos the money, charging him 15% because I don't like him and never did and couldn't abide his pa before him. I said to Carlos, young fella, you pay Rebo and get back that mortgage. Then you bring it to me right here and we'll tear it up. Be you sure, I said to him, that you do just that.
What do you think about Rebo being missing, you being an old-timer here?
Could have happened some several ways. Rebo had lots of enemies and some men he done dirt to when he was county attorney and holding other jobs. They're real salty folks. I'd have been acting four-eyed on the road if I'd made as many enemies as Rebo had. And then, too, there's Mex smugglers and cow thieves running hither and yon around the country. They might have cracked down on him just in case he had something on him. Or just in case.
Who was the Mex he took out of La Piedra with him going back?
That was the ghost of Cortez, invisible to the naked eye. He rode sitting on the boy's lap.
Meaning?
Meaning that I was sitting right here when Teo Rebo finished up a cow trade with Willard Steves and come by here. He stopped the buckboard here and asked me, Teo and me, we've been on the outs for 20 years, if he could buy a plug of Star Navy. I advertise to serve the needs and wants of man and beast, I told him. So if I couldn't rightfully sell to you on one count, I'll let you slip on the other and only charge you double what folks pay." So he took his chaw and paid his money with his yaller teeth showing like a wolf's. Then he licked the mules and went straight down the trail, and I could see him for some 2 mile. So he never got a passenger in La Piedra.
Of course, he could have picked a Mex up on the road.
Yeah, he could have, but... Son, you've got a pretty good name in the old outfit. 30 years ago when I was rangering, I knew your pa. So I'm going to tell you a few things I wouldn't tell most folks, and all I want is your word you won't blab out all this or say who told you. All right. Now, she don't make a bit of never mind to me what happened to Teo Ribot. Like I said, we've been on the outs a long time. If we'd got just a mite more on the outs, Ribot'd have cashed in his checks. He knew that, too. But if I was a ranger now, with the job of clearing up the way he went out, I'd figure some on Carlos Smith. Not that Carlos has the guts needful to down anybody, even from behind. Carlos, he'd be afraid that the fella'd turn around. But Carlos and Capon are just like dog and master. And Capon's a curly wolf. He'll be sheriff of Piedra County come election day, now that Ribot's out of the way, with all he knew about Capon. Capon's been mixed up in most everything a man could figure. Stealing cows out of Mexico, rustling his neighbor's stock, jumping mining claims when the real owners went up into thin air, same as Ribot has just done. Plain and fancy murder. He's had a crew hanging out around the open A that enough warrants could have been hung on to make him look like a Monday clothesline. Whenever somebody come looking for one of these hairpins, word always went ahead, and Capon, well, he never knew a thing about the fella or about him being wanted. So, if I was a young fella about your size and complexion, I'd figure that if Capon never saw Ribot last, then he likely knows who did. And figure, too, that Carlos Smith knows a heap more than he's a-telling.
Thanks. You figure this election business was reason enough for Capon's wanting Ribot out of sight?
Plenty reason, son. But even if the election wasn't coming off, Ribot's knowing so much about Capon's doings was all the same as a death warrant without a date with Ribot's name on it. Now, if I was you, I'd straddle that black there and cut across country to miss the D-Bar-D and come in along the edge of Satan Land, that bare patch of sand that nothing lives on, to the open A. Ride right up to the house and light and stay the night. But be damned careful of everything you do or say. Capin's some sort of educated furriner, and he could turn the average man plumb inside out in half an hour. Oh, he's slick. Slick as Ribot ever was.
Weir nodded, absently eyeing an oncoming rider a half mile away, Mexican, who had apparently turned into the trail at that moment and was riding toward the store. Clem Tooley picked up an old brass spyglass from the floor and trained it on the rider, then set it down.
Florentino Valdez, a vaquero of Carlos Smith's. Reckon Carlos has paid his hands, though where he'd lay on to the dinero, I don't know.
Again, he picked up the spyglass and leveled it down the road.
Wonder where Monte Murillo is. That's usually Valdez's shatter. Ah!
He nodded to himself contentedly and returned the spyglass to its resting place.
Monty's just turned into the road. They're passable fair hombres, Florentino and Monty.
The two vaqueros came jogging on their shaggy little ponies until they drew rein before the gallery of the store. They nodded gravely to Clem Tooley.
Buenas tardes, Señor Clem.
You two come here to buy me out? One moment, I'll have that lazy Manuel move the shelves out here, where you may the more easily take my stock away.
No, no, not today, senor. When Monte and I have made our fortunes, we will do that. Today, we wish only the tins of peaches, and Monte desires that neckerchief of red, which he has admired for so long. For me, I like the color green, and so I will have the neckerchief of that color.
They dropped their ponies' reins and came at a rolling horseman's gait into the store. Clem Tooley waddled in before them, and Ware continued to squat upon the gallery and puzzle the complications which seemed to grow more tangled as he considered this disappearance of the cunning tail Ribot. 20 minutes or so went by, then the two vaqueros came back outside, both carrying large opened can of peaches in each hand. They moved down the store wall and sat comfortably in a shady place. Clem Tooley waddled out and resumed his huge chair.
Look at this.
Ware stared. In Tooley's big palm lay a tattered $5 bill and a gold piece of the same value. There was absolutely nothing about the note to attract attention. But after a second, he noted that around the edge of the coin, the gold was brighter than in the center. It had a sort of rim of clean, untarnished gold.
Somebody's spending his watch charm.
Somebody's spending somebody's watch charm.
In Clem Tooley's half-hidden blue eyes leaped a sudden light that illuminated for Ware in a flash the true caliber of this lazy-seeming fat man.
Last time I saw that gold piece, son, she was hanging on to Teo Ribot's watch chain. The bill is one of the fives I give Carlos Smith on that loan I made him. I'm a downright funny jigger, son, born that away. I just naturally see things and remember them. Florentino Valdez, he says Smith gave him this money. That is, he says Carlos paid it to him a couple of days ago.
Which leaves the gate open for a couple chances. Either Carlos Smith stuck up Ribot and robbed and did away with him, or those two hairpins yonder turned the trick.
Mm-hmm. If you wanted a lot of glory with no trouble, all you'd have to do would be arrest Valdez and Murillo and charge them with Ribot's murder and robbery. Carlos Smith would deny giving them this money, and they got no witnesses to prove he did. Seems they was out on the range when Carlos rode up and paid them each $10, their month's pay. And they was riding range together on the day Ribot left the D-Bar-D. Looks right black for them.
Does, kinda. And two, reputations have been built up in this country on just that kind of deal. But I draw pay for finding out the truth about things so far as I can, not for building up a big rep. I'll be a damn sight better off if nobody knew I was alive, or a ranger. What do you figure?
Why, either way, it might have happened. I don't figure Carlos has got nerve enough to have done the job. And I've known these two Mexes a long time. I've always believed them average, honest, and good-hearted. Either guess is like to be wrong, of course. Still, I kind of stick to my reckoning, in spite of it all.
All right. Hang on to those exhibits and I'll yell for them if they're wanted. Reckon we can lay on to these fellas if we need them. Me? I'm hightailing across country. Reckon I'll go listen to those shadows whispering.
So long. And son, if you ride back up this way, you'll see me. And even if you don't, maybe you'll see me anyhow.
Ware nodded, if somewhat blankly, then reined Rocket around. But suddenly he pulled up again and once more faced the storekeeper.
These two fellas that the Ribot family sent hunting Teo, they go back to Los Alamos?
Yeah, went back to say they never found nothing. But Teresa Ribot, the gal, you know, she sent them out again, and they're roaming around the landscape somewheres right now. Judd Bingham and Whiskers Logan, two downright serious boys, too. That Whiskers, he's half Comanche, and if he can't smell out a track, nobody can. Tell you, son, if I'd buried anybody in the southwest end of the state of Texas and never wanted that there corpse found, I'd surely hope Whiskers Logan would die before he'd come nigh the place.
I see.
A hot wind blew across the 40 or 50 miles of yellow sand that stretched southward from the trail that Ware rode toward the House of Whispering Shadows.
Satan Land, Well named.
It was a sinister waste that was like a lake, the turgid waters of which had been solidified. The wind-carved dunes curled up around cactus and stunted greasewood, threatening to overwhelm even those poor manifestations of life, as if resentful that anything could live in their midst. The rattlesnakes even seemed to come out of Satan Land to find their food. Their looping or dragging trailings were many. The faint trail of horsemen led along the edge of the sands, where rode with mind busy. Of the many mysteries he had faced, this puzzle of Teo Rabot's vanishing seemed the knottiest problem. It would be easy to take those two simple-seeming vaqueros who spent money of Rabot's, but that would not settle the mystery unless Carlos Smith's connection, or lack of connection, with the crime could be established beyond a doubt. And if he had Rabot's money, if he had paid the two vaqueros the money Clem Tooley had recognized, but denied that, nothing could be proved. Ware drew up suddenly in late afternoon. At the edge of the faint track he followed was a rut in the soft earth beside a reef of rock. He stared hard. If that were not the trail of a wheel, he studied the track. It had no fellow, as a wheeled vehicle should have. No faintest sign of a second rut anywhere. He was well south of the D-Bar-D now. Very soon he should be reaching the open A of the mysterious, powerful, sinister Capon, master of the House of Whispering Shadows. It occurred to him, remembering all this talk with Carlos Smith, that the half-breed rancher had somehow given him the impression that Teo Rabot, leaving the D-Bar-D on the return trip to Los Alamos, had gone south over the main trail, well to westward of Satan Land, that moved toward the river by way of the Notch, the pass in the Blancos. Perhaps Carlos Smith had not said definitely that Rabot's buckboard had gone that way, instead of this lonelier but shorter trail, yet certainly Ware had come away with that idea. And here was the track of a buckboard. The absence of the other rut was perhaps proof of nothing. Yet suppose someone had wished to remove all evidence of the buckboard's passing this way. Suppose this interested person had wiped out the buckboard wheel ruts, but had missed this one wheel track. He shrugged and spurred on, and inside the hour, without having seen any other trace of the vehicle, any vehicle, he came to a ridge and saw lying in a little green valley that was threaded by a creek, the mass of buildings that must be the open A. There were adobe barracks for the cowboys and laborers, but all were overshadowed by the great rambling bulk of the central building, the House of Whispering Shadows. A cowboy came out of a tornillo break, a tanned and efficient-looking young man, more than usually well-mounted. A long-barreled Colt hung low on his left side, with butt to the front. A well-kept carbine was in a sheath beneath his leg. He looked long and hard at Ware, then nodded.
Howdy. Going up to the house?
Reckon. Crackers and cheese at La Piedra was a sparrow's dinner and a long way back.
They rode down the slope in silence. Everything about the open A was orderly, well-built, and well-tended. It was the finest place Ware had ever seen. All the dobies, including the House of Whispering Shadows, were smoothly whitewashed. There was no litter about the yard. Indeed, before the big house itself, a green lawn stretched smooth and short.
Grass? On a cow ranch? And a piano player?
Go on up to the house. He'll want to see you.
Ware rode on up and picketed his mount at the hitch rack beside a corral in the side yard. Then he went at an awkward horseman's gait along a graveled walk and so into the great veranda. As he stood before the door, suddenly something seemed to pour from these thick mud brick walls, coming like a cloud shadow across a bright prairie. It was almost as palpable as a faint, cold wind. He instinctively half-turned to see if outside the late afternoon sunlight were gone. Ware looked up impassively into the long, thin, wax-like face of the man who could be none other than Capon. Great, shining black eyes regarded him steadily, Upon Capon's wide, almost lipless mouth hovered the very shadow of a smile, which affected Ware much as had that sinister breath or the house itself.
Good afternoon. You are Ware, the ranger, of course. You'll stay the night with me.
Thought I'd bunk and eat here and go to Los Alamos come morning.
You are very welcome. Come in and I'll show you a room. I'll have your horse taken care of.
Capon stood aside to let Ware pass through the hall into an enormous living room, where furniture and furnishings were an odd mixture of east and west. Magnificent tapestries hanging from the green-tinted plaster walls, with, over them, Indian baskets, war bows, tomahawks. A grand piano stood in a corner.
Sit down.
Capon waved a long white hand toward a great chair draped with a jaguar skin. Capon took another chair, even larger, so deep that in the dusk of the room, looking across 10 feet of intervening space, Ware saw nothing plainly save the white face. So pale it seemed to hang in the air, and again to Ware came that feeling as of a mist of evil floating out of this house and surrounding him. He was sensitive as a wild animal almost to these atmospheres. Now a sixth sense warned him of deadly danger. He sat like a crouching cat, ready to move like a spring uncoiled, yet without seeming tense or nervous.
Well, what do you think of the disappearance of the esteemed Ribbo?
Why, I just about got it figured out. He was killed by folks that didn't like him politically. If he wasn't stuck up by somebody that wanted the money he was packing, or captured and held to keep him out of the next election. That is, if he just didn't walk off to start all over again somewhere else with the money.
Ware felt that he was being probed now.
But all you folks are just the same. Something happens in your neck of the woods, like Tail Rabot's dropping out of sight. It looks real big and important to you. A ranger shows up on a trail, and right off you figure he can't be looking for anything but your lost man, or a rustled cow. This fella Smith up the trail, he jumped that away when I rode up.
Then you're not on the Ribbo mystery.
Didn't Smith tell you I was hunting a fella wanted for murder over at San Andres?
He said that you said you were. But Carlos is not overly bright. It seemed to me that you might well have been suspicious of him and so evaded admission of your real business. Personally, I have interest in solving this mystery. At the next election, I am a candidate for sheriff. I believe that, in spite of anything anyone can do, I'll be elected. But in politics, one does not safely take anything for granted. If Ribbo is dead, I want to know that. If smugglers or anyone have taken him prisoner, I want to know that also. If he has merely decided that his race is run in this locality, again, I want to know it. For he is supporting my opponent, Bridges. With his assistance, Bridges is dangerous. Without, not particularly. You can see why I wish to know whether Ribbo is apt to reappear.
Did you see Ribbo on his trip toward Los Alamos? I mean, did he get this far?
No. Carlos Smith told me that Ribbo with his son and a strange Mexican left the D-Bar-D early one morning coming this way. Who saw him after that, nobody has yet come to tell us.
Reckon he could have wandered in Satan Land and ended up there?
How? He knew this country well. He had no reason to leave the main trail. He was my political opponent, but still he was sure of a personal welcome here. Why should he have taken that back trail? Anyway, vaqueros of Smith's were working along that edge of Satan Land. He didn't go that far east.
Oh, but he did. He didn't come by the main trail. He came along the edge of Satan Land.
For an instant, there was utter silence in the big, shadowy room.
The young detective. My boy, when you are as old as, experienced as I, you won't jump to conclusions so quickly. I tell you that Ribbo did not go by that trail or in that direction.
Well, maybe I've been misled. But there's buckboard tracks along there, and I figured they must be Ribbo's. Thought maybe he'd strayed out into the sand and never got out.
Cartwheel ruts you doubtless saw. The Mexicans from Rancheria come across and go around the end of Satan Land to the salt beds. They have from time immemorial. No, you're jumping at conclusions, but you are trying to solve the mystery.
Well, sir, it's this way. When I hit Los Alamos tomorrow, there may be orders for me to look into this business. They tell me two fellas from Los Alamos went back without finding track of Ribot. So I might as well find out all I can and be that much ahead if I do have to hunt Ribot.
Just then, a big, dark-faced man came rushing into the room.
Listen, Capen. Them devils Bingham and Whiskers Logan are snooping around Monument Rock, and we better get the...
Ware saw no gesture, but something had stopped the flood of nervous speech.
If they bother those cattle after our warning, I'll run them out of the country. So long as they were working for Miss Ribot, or pretending to, I let them go and come as they pleased on my range. But this present trip of theirs begins to seem very odd to me. I've lost too much stock over the line to be charitable. Yes, get the boys and warn those killers to leave the open A at once. But Jim, no shooting. Don't let them provoke you into it.
Yes, sir.
The big man looked hard at Ware, half concealed in the big chair. Then he whirled and left. Capen stood motionless for a minute, then went quickly after.
And Jim, wait a moment. Three men should be taken with you.
Funny. Friend Jim wasn't mad when he came in to tell about the tracker snooping around somewhere. He was scared. And if it was rustling that was in his mind, he wouldn't have been scared. He would have been pining to bend a 45 bullet around somebody. House of Whispering Shadows. Huh. It isn't whispering anything to me yet. Except that maybe this isn't going to be too damn healthy.
It wasn't long before Capen returned from talking to his hired hand, Jim.
Dinner is ready. I hope nothing comes of this business. It has been quite a while since we've had to fight off rustlers, though when first I came to the Open A, such wars were of weekly occurrence.
Ware followed without reply to the low-ceilinged dining room, where a long table gleamed white with the snowiest of linen cloths and was set with cut glass and fine china and silver. Two young Chinese men in white jackets were standing behind chairs. Capen bowed Ware toward one and then sat down at the head of the table.
You're missing your cocktail. It is of my own concoction, an improvement upon one I learned to make in Paris years ago.
Don't drink.
The sixth sense was strong in him now, and Ware obeyed it blindly. Never in his life had he known so strongly the feel of deadly danger all around him. Nor was it the plain sword against which a man might jerk his gun and make a flaming stand. This was like a snake stroke from the dark. A shadow of displeasure, or defeat, showed for a flash in Capen's face. But he smiled courteously in almost the same moment. They ate silently, save for an occasional polite remark of Capen's. Once or twice, looking up quickly, Ware found his host's eyes upon him. And in one sort of reading, Ware was skilled, the reading of men's faces. Capen was contemptuous of him. He felt that beyond the shadow of a doubt. It was plain in the sardonic lifting of the man's lip corners, in the drooping of the full lids over great black eyes. And in Ware it waked a dull resentment, waked also determination to throw a bomb into Capen's supercilious calm. The Chinese boy went over to a sideboard and took up the great silver platter upon which a silver and porcelain coffee service sat. As he carried this out the door, Ware thought that he saw a fine steam rising from the nozzle of the coffee pot. Why should the coffee be taken out when, ready for serving, it had been in the room? Presently, the boy came back with it and brought it to the table. He poured a cup, and Ware lifted his hand with a small smile.
None for me, thanks.
Capen stared. There was no doubting his barely suppressed anger now.
You are quite a temperate young man.
Coffee's no good for a ranger. Coffee and liquor and cigarettes, they're all bad. Lots of rangers don't use any one of the three. I do smoke.
A faint drowsiness rose in Ware, not overpowering, but apparent. And an idea came. He let himself relax a little more with passing minutes, let his eyelids drop. Suddenly, he straightened and grinned ruefully at Capen.
Man, but I'm tired. Never knew it till just now. But I've been riding right steady for a week and sleeping hard. If you don't mind, I reckon I'd like to hit the blankets.
Oh, surely. Your bedroll won't be necessary tonight. Juan here will show you to a bedroom.
Having turned back the corners of an immaculate bed, the Chinese boy looked furtively at Ware, who was already pulling off his boots. A sly cat grin crept over the young man's face.
I believe that you will sleep soundly here, senor.
Ware went on undressing. The boy went out and closed the door, but Ware knew he was listening at the other side of it. So he blew out the lamp and drooped upon the bed. As he lay there, he grinned. Like every other room Ware had seen in the house, the bedroom was decorated with odds and ends. Some Indian, some Spanish, others he couldn't identify. But the pair of moccasins hanging with a shield on one wall, he had seen and planned to use as he came into the room in the wake of the Chinese boy. An hour passed and still he was silent, patient as an Apache, lying with hands upon the butts of the twin white-handled Colts. The room was pitch dark. It was moonless outside. He was alert particularly against sound or movement from door to window. He was sure that nothing came from either, and yet he realized suddenly that something approached his bed. His hands closed on the Colt butts. He dug in his heels and was ready for a snake-swift move. He moved a little. Again, he detected the sounds of movement coming closer. At last, he barely made out a dim shape beside the bed. He watched it until he could see the head, and that head was bowing, coming down toward him. The House of Whispering Shadows. Anything was possible here. When he had first moved, he had drawn the right-hand gun, and now, without rising, using only his hand and arm, he flicked up the long-barreled weapon. The pistol caught the intruder on the side of the head. A soft, limp body sagged on top of Ware. He wriggled out from under it, and his free hand leaped to find its throat. But whoever it was, his visitor was senseless. Probably one of the Chinese boys. And upon the bed, the Chinese had dropped an odd, wavy-bladed knife. Ware left him lying on the bed and went on all fours across the room, got down those Apache moccasins and slipped into them. Jacket and trousers next. Then he was ready. How had the Chinese gotten in? Around the room he crawled until he found a place where a door yawned, a door that had not been detectable in the light. He hesitated, then shook his head. He might encounter someone out there if he took this passage. So he crossed to the window and looked out. Nothing he could see in the darkness. He was about to straddle the sill. Someone was waiting below the window. The hall door, then, was his only chance. He crossed to it with an infinite slowness. No trace of danger here, but he slid through the door with the Colt extended and his thumb holding back the hammer. Down the hall he went like a shadow among shadows. Around the turn, and so to the living room door. Silence in there. He flattened himself against the wall, and someone went by him with the soft pad-pad of feet. Then to the front door of the house. It was open, and he edged around the facing and stood against the wall. If there was anyone on the veranda, he could not detect their presence. So he went on out into the yard. He went to the corral and found himself following a man who moved with not too much care against noise. Where this one had come from, Ware had no idea, but he trailed him and slid against the log wall of the corral. Several horsemen drew to a halt within a few feet of him. That man he had followed stepped forward.
Jim, you got them?
Yeah, on the mules. Had a hell of a time, too. Them damn mules didn't like that job of packing.
Unload them, then. There's no use of wasting time, though our ranger visitor is soundly asleep and had best not waken.
Unload them? Unload Bingham and Logan?
Had they been killed or captured by Capon's gunmen? What had he stumbled upon? What had been so carefully guarded from him?
I reckon that when Whiskers Logan gets to sniffing around tomorrow, he's gonna be right disappointed. But he sure had me scared today when I see him getting so close. I sent you word right off, I'm telling you.
Never mind the discussion. Are they unloaded? Jim, send the boys back to the bunkhouse. You and I and Carlos can manage the rest.
Ware scowled. Then these prisoners, or whatever they were, could not be the two trackers hired by the Ribots. As he moved a little nearer, he heard another rider approaching.
Oh, once in the saddle I used to go happy. Oh, once in the saddle I used to go free.
What the devil? Who is that coming? Carlos, it's from your way. Who would be coming now?
Quién sabe? I left Squint and Meg a mile up the trail to ride like hell this way if anybody was coming. What happened to old Meg, I wonder?
You boys hike for the bunkhouse. Jim, you go meet whoever is coming. Carlos, you and I will have to manage this end. Remember, all of you are turned in. You're being waked.
Weir stood with drawn guns, undecided as to what move he had best make. Capon and Carlos now came toward him with some heavy load between them. Past him they went and on around the corral. He followed. When they went back, he stole out and felt for the thing they had dropped. His hand found a man's cold face. Quicker they came on the return trip. He had barely enough time to slide softly back against the wall of the corral.
Yes, sir. Old Whiskers Mug is going to be a sideshow. And when they tell him in Los Alamos how them Rebo mules come home wearing busted harness, he...
I have told you before about talking too much. I act always as if the walls had ears. You had best do the same.
Hell, ain't nobody gonna hear nothing. If you dope Blair's grub and put that Chinese killer of yours watching him with a knife, there's nobody gonna be snooping tonight. And them fellas are coming. Likely it's just them crazy Diamond A boys of Steve's hitting for Los Alamos in a big drunk. Ready to pack them down below?
In a moment. I'll get into the tunnel and you slide them to me. Then we can carry them into the main cellar, and I'll slip back into the house so that if I have to make an appearance, I can do it instantly. You'll have to stay below. The House of Whispering Shadows. Well, if ghosts can wander about, then there is reason for whispers coming from the shadows here. Rebo and the Brat will find old acquaintances among the shadows.
Like hell I stay below. Nah, I'm coming right at your coattails or a little ahead. Not for me staying down there with that gang of yours, Capon. And I don't give a damn what you say about it.
All right, push the bodies down. The boys first.
Glad I never done the job.
Ah, but you profited by it, my friend. You received your mortgage and so made 7,000 odd dollars for disposing of the buckboard and mules and keeping guilty silence. Don't try to act the innocent here, Carlos. They would hang you by the neck if ever your part were known. Hurry with them.
Hello, the house!
We're thrilled to the voice. It was Clem Tooley.
Hurry, Cuerpo del Diablo. Have you lead in your boots?
We're stole forward, following Carlos Smith's passage. Suddenly, he had the sense of someone behind him and sprang sideways. A hand struck him lightly. He stumbled. The next instant, he fell about 5 feet in a pile of bodies, some dead, some alive and fighting. His colts were still in his hands. Instinctively, he had clung to them. Ware wriggled out of the mass and to his knees, then began flailing around him with the long barrels.
Ware! Where are you? Where? Where?
Here!
Hurt, son?
Clem Tooley stood in the tunnel mouth, showing as a huge, vaguely outlined bulk above Ware.
Heard you shooting. If it was you...
It was me, all right. I got Capon and Carlos Smith and the Chinese down here spread out all around me. And the two Rebos.
Glory be! Let me get a light. The old House of Whispering Shadows is living up to her name, all right.
Ware moved a little so that he had all his captives before him, then struck a match. Capon lay motionless beneath Carlos Smith, who was beginning to move a little, though his eyes were closed. Across Smith was that Chinese boy who had taken Capon's orders at the dinner table. He, too, seemed to be breathing, but unconscious. The bodies of the Rebos were in a corner of the square well. The match went out. Ware struck another, and this time inspected Capon more carefully. He was dead, killed by that one shot Ware had fired. And behind Ware was a dark passageway. An idea came to Ware, who could look with grim calm upon Capon and plan ahead without worry. He caught Carlos Smith by the shoulders.
He dragged him backward and a few feet up the tunnel and swiftly lashed his wrists together behind him with Smith's own twisted shirt sleeve.
All right, son. Andy here. He's coming down to take this lamp. We'll see what's what down there.
A slender man dropped into the tunnel mouth and in an instant was holding up a kerosene lamp. Then Clem Tooley, moving easily despite his great bulk, joined them.
Tap that Chinese, will you? Then come on down here. I got an idea. Where's the rest of Capin's gang?
In the bunkhouse. I gathered up a bunch of Diamond A boys and drifted this way, just in case you got in trouble with Capin, as I figured you likely would. We was just swinging down at the bunkhouse with Jim Millet, making a sort of welcome when you unlimbered your hog leg. So I bent my gun over Jim's head, much to his surprise, of course, and my boys are ringing the bunkhouse around. Nobody'll get out of there till Clem Tooley says so.
Tooley straightened above the Chinese boy and came waddling up the tunnel, looking the benevolent, well-pleased Buddha.
Got Carlos, huh? Fine. I've been laying off to smash this Capin outfit quite a spell now. And when Capin announced he'd run for sheriff and figured he'd likely be elected, I made up my mind right then not to stand for it. You come along right handy. I was going to come over here with a bunch and make Capin let me search the place. But this is heaps better. Somebody might have got killed the other way.
Ware bent swiftly to whisper in Clem Tooley's ear.
Good idea. Come on, Carlos. Up the trail with you. We come to look into these here whispering foundations we hear tell about. Come along and help us.
What happened? Somebody hit me.
That was me. I was afraid you'd do something to keep you from hanging. Let's go. Now that Capin's confessed that Smith here done the Ribot murder, there's nothing much left to do, Tooley.
That I done it? I never done no such thing. I never knew a thing about
it. Now shut up. You trying to out-talk Capin's sworn statement? You gonna get up in court and look him in the eye and try to wiggle out of it? You make me tired.
Reckon this here's the cellar. The big one.
Yeah, it's a cellar, all right. And that lying, murdering rascal Capin, he's got a half dozen men buried in it, too. He was gonna put Ribot alongside Jimmy Thornton, that was cashier of the bank at Ancho, and that Capin brought here to make him tell the combination of the safe so he could rob it without making a noise. He shot Thornton, and there's old Snake Stomper Ledoux, that old Concepcion mine, and...
Well, anyway, we got the deadwood on you, Carlos. You murdered the Ribots to get back that money. And being in Capin's gang, you brought the bodies here, of course.
I never... Ribot had a half dozen ropes round Capin's neck, and he was gonna bust him wide open come election. Capin and Jim Millet and Blackie Wall and that squinting mig that works for me, they done it. I knew about it, and Capin gave me my mortgage that Ribot had on him. I hadn't paid him the money at all.
Ware was groping about. Now he found a little stairway and a barred door at its head. It opened into the living room. Tooley and Smith followed him up, the bonds having been taken from Smith's wrists.
Sit down at the table and write what you told us.
Ware stood over the trembling half-breed until the smeary page was done and signed. Clem Tooley witnessed it and grinned at Smith.
I'll have the boys rope the ones you mentioned. The others? Well, I reckon we'll tell them to hightail it out of Los Alamos County. That way'll save heaps of trouble, Capin being dead.
Capin dead? Why, you said...
You don't ever want to believe all you hear, and not much you see, but especially nothing much you hear.
Nah, might just be a shatter whispering. Come on, Ware. Let's go collect them other candidates for the Cottonwood Prance.